Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the day after the inauguration of Barack Obama as the 44th President of the United States. This hour of the program, we'll talk about the work that will be done today and in the days ahead, and we'll also spend a great deal of time reflecting on what all of us saw and heard yesterday. Our guest this hour is Professor Lawrence Jacobs, Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, Professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Minnesota. And we'll be welcoming phone calls as you reflect on all that happened yesterday. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email today, that address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor Jacobs, what a pleasure to have you on today. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
I spent many hours watching television yesterday. And you know what was interesting? There were so many meaningful moments. But as the president said in his speech, there were moments upon moments upon moments yesterday where people, I think, found meaning in something that was much greater than themselves, as he made reference to in the inaugural.
Well, I think that was the case for everyone who was watching.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, there's a story here about this race barrier being broken, and just the outpouring of excitement and disbelief, I think, was very powerful for so many people. And that was just one of the tableaus yesterday of tears and hugs and really disbelief. I think there was also another theme here, which is real fear in the country about where we're heading and what the prospects are for the country. And Barack Obama was walking a tightrope.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to revive hope without creating expectations that cannot be met.
And the fear is about, obviously, jobs. The news that's corresponding with this inaugural is really terrible economically, isn't it?
This is about as bad as it gets.
Mm.
In the post-war period, I think it was one of the almost unspoken backdrops to this remarkable inauguration. Stock market was plunging
mm-hmm.
over 300 points. We'll have to see what happens today. But, that's just not the stock market. It really is reflecting some very deep problems in our financial system and how you get the economy going again. And I think for a lot of Americans, both watching and maybe not watching, this uncertainty about where the country's heading is part of the backdrop and, the hope, but also the concerns about where we are right now.
Yeah. I kept thinking as I was watching for much of the day yesterday about the people who perhaps did not vote for this man from the coverage and from the feel in the country. You had the feeling, I was saying to my husband, that everybody in the country voted for him, which obviously was not the case. What about those people who did not? What about this spirit of bipartisanship and the urgency of doing something about economics, about war, et cetera? Is most of the country with him? Does it make a difference?
Well, first, I do think there's now been a surge in broadening support for Barack Obama. If you look at his approval levels, he's now getting quite a bit of support from Republicans and those who voted for John McCain. And that's significant. His approval levels are, through the roof. Outside of a war, it's hard to think of an occasion where a president has gotten this kind of bounce. So, yes, I mean, that helps. And the fact that members of Congress are literally looking out on that sea of a million, maybe even 2 million people, is a kind of a down payment on what I think we're going to see in the Obama presidency, which is at various moments some tough talk about, do you want this populist crowd camping out either on your computer sites or literally in person at rallies. So, yeah, that's going to give the president some leverage. I would just caution, because that is not going to be the do-all. And this president will learn what all previous presidents have learned, which is the limits on their power are enormous.
Mm-hmm. What about, just take this a little bit farther than what he said yesterday when he talked about the cynics failing to understand the ground has shifted beneath them. Stale political arguments have consumed us for so long, no longer apply. The question we ask today is not whether our government is too big or too small, but whether it works, whether it can help families find jobs at a decent wage, care that they can afford, a retirement that is dignified. Did he lay out a whole new road, do you think, for government, Professor Jacobs?
I think he was very eloquent in describing what he considers to be a kind of bankrupt, no-win debate between our Hatfield and McCoys today, kind of liberalism and a kind of conservatism. I agree with you that for me, was one of the key moments in the speech, because it really is getting into his philosophy about government and also about private markets and foreign policy. But to me, it was more eloquent in terms of what he didn't like. I don't see clarity in terms of the new synthesis he has in mind, other than, you know, we're going to make this up as we go along, and we're going to be pragmatic and not kind of ideological. But these beliefs are very deeply set, and whether he abides by them or not is almost irrelevant when you think about how members of Congress, you know, the other branch of government, is going to behave. And I think you could easily read his inaugural, at least parts of it, as, liberalism version, 5.6 or something. This is, I think, his aspiration to move past the ideological battles is palpable, but I think it's a real question mark whether he's going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. What moments will stay with you from yesterday? Obviously, the whole day will stay with everybody who saw it and heard it. But what particularly moved you yesterday?
Rick Warren's prayer was obviously very controversial. I was very moved by that, and I think President Obama's decision to try to reach out to a part of America that is not on the same page with him on some issues paid off. I mean, I think for people who didn't vote for Barack Obama, which are, those folks who are Americans, that Rick Warren spoke to them, and the message he said was very inclusive, and I think you could kind of dissect his message as one of, we're all God's children. The kind of hatred that people saw in his earlier comments maybe soften a bit. If you listen to the discussion among some of the conservative communities, there's some real trepidation about what Rick Warren did. I thought that stood out. I thought that was a very powerful prayer. Aretha Franklin?
Aretha! I know.
How many times have we heard that song? And yet,
I know.
I turned to someone sitting next to me and I'm like, what is she singing? I mean, it was spectacular.
Yes.
And that was very moving. Obviously, just the tableau. I mean, every time you had the shot from behind the podium looking out at a million or more people, it was, I don't think words captured it. It was just quite stunning. And then obviously, Reverend Lowry's comments at the end.
Mm-hmm.
This is someone who, with Dr. Martin Luther King, was one of the leaders of the Civil Rights movement. And I think both the fact that he was there at age 87, but also what he said and a little humor of his comments at the end, it was one of the clearest links to this remarkable historical trajectory, and one that I don't think, despite all the discussion of it, I mean, this ability of America to elect an African-American is, to me, singular. I just don't know another country, except maybe Peru, where you've had a racial minority elected by a majority. And I think, the Lowry moment is kind of a very powerful exclamation point.
Right. I love the poem, too. I thought that Elizabeth Alexander captured in words that will be remembered for a long time this sense of America, and I thought it was just a lovely poem, and the words about love, which can almost sound corny, but she didn't. She really rose to that particular occasion, talking about this widening pool of light, love with no need to preempt grievance. It was a strong poem. It was sort of the best of American poetry, bringing farmers and a woman and her son waiting for the bus and teachers, take out your pencils and begin. I really liked it.
You know, I'm glad to hear you say that. My wife is a fiction writer and creative writing program here. And, you know, you do have fear that these great arts of ours in the country, including poetry, have lost what used to be kind of a center stage position. I mean, you go back over history, you know, the nation's poet was often called upon to kind of synthesize, and obviously the art of rhetoric, not the pejorative use of it, but the art, and is no longer taught in schools and so forth. So I think your point is a powerful one and an important reminder about the power of words, the place of poetry, and in this case, this particular poem's ability to somehow, how do you synthesize where we are?
Right, right.
And you can give a lot of speeches, but imagine really just so few words trying to, you know, capturing that moment.
Mm-hmm. And the images, when you talked about the significance of the element here of our being a country that is so different than most places on world and the world, and the president is making reference to, which he has such a way with words too, this patchwork heritage that, what was his line here, that is our strength. Isn't that true about this country? It just, when you travel to other places in the world, you realize how unique we are. And by golly, it's been the source of death and incredibly difficult times, but it is our strength. We're from everywhere.
Well, I think, you know, we're in a battle over that in America. I mean, we had a pretty intense debate during the campaign, particularly during the primary part, and particularly in the Republican Party, about immigration. And I know my friends who are Republicans make this distinction between legal and illegal immigration, but that's not necessarily the way it's being seen, either by people who are, you know, trying to crack down on immigration or people who are more sympathetic. And I think that issue is one that's going to come back. But, you know, there is a reality on the ground, and I think, you know, this is another kind of, as Rick Warren put it, a hinge point at this historical moment. The country is becoming more diverse. Just demographically, this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time that our economy is becoming more globalized. And just here, you know, in Wisconsin and Minnesota, we benefit by the fact that we've got schools that have a significant number of people speaking other languages. It creates the opportunity to open up other economic markets and to prosper. And to have a president whose own biography and understanding of that, you know, could well, you know, usher in this important transition. But I do think it's one of those three or four elements of this historical episode that's going to have to be negotiated and worked through.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of people who are still not fully comfortable with that.
Oh, that's interesting. So when you mentioned the fear that we have, that's another part of the fear. We think about economy, but it might be fear of diversity as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's tremendous amount of joy and marvel yesterday, but, you know, I think with a good number of Americans, there, this is a lot to kind of process. And my hunch is, in the coming weeks and months, we're going to be going through some very difficult times with our economy. And you just look back in the history of this country, and it's not unusual for for kind of racial and ethnic tensions to kind of flare up.
There are a number of people who want to share what they experienced yesterday. This is a day to talk, everybody, so let's welcome your phone calls. We'll be with you in just a moment at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you would like to send an email, do that. It's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Professor Lawrence Jacobs is our guest, director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Government at the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, and a professor in the Department of Political Science, this at the University of Minnesota. He's also put together some wonderful conferences with people from all kinds of political perspectives looking at major issues of the day. To you in just a moment, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls now. Let's start with Sandy from Algoma. Hello, Sandy.
Hi. You know what? I was so excited about watching that on TV yesterday. And when Aretha Franklin started singing, I just started bawling.
Oh.
You know what? We are all so excited about this and so enthusiastic, and we have such hopes for this new president. I was listening to the BBC the other night, and they were interviewing people from all over the world, and everybody is watching this. And I think that they have a renewed sense of, of hope as well, just because of the fact that after coming from 8 years out of the darkness, where all we dealt with was like secrecy and deceit and death and destruction, and here now we've got this president that is looking forward and looking to change things and to, you know, have new relationships with people in countries from all over the world. We're just so excited. I can't even talk.
I can hear it in your voice. You did well. There was an interesting response, and I'm wondering how the Muslim world took care in his address to pointedly talk about the Muslim world and those areas where we can find mutual interest and need respect for each other. What was happening in Kenya? What was happening in England? Can you talk a little bit about that? Are we overstating how the world has responded here, or not?
Oh no, and I think Barack Obama realizes that this, you know, willingness to rethink what America stands for is a very powerful tool. And I think we're going to see perhaps today or even tomorrow American envoys spreading out across the globe to basically provide calling cards and saying, you know, we are open for business. We want to, you know, take another look at a lot of these issues, whether it's, you know, the Palestinian issue. And obviously, I think one of the most dramatic, potentially dramatic, is the situation in Iran. That is an asset. Foreign policy, you've got a lot of tools, but one of them is the ability to use the bully pulpit on an international stage, kind of public diplomacy. I think this is something that Barack Obama singularly adds to the repertoire for America.
Mm-hmm. And do you expect the appointment of a Middle East envoy today?
I think it's probably going to come. You know, there's been speculation that a former Democratic senator and majority leader, Mitchell, will be appointed to the Middle East. Now, there's kind of some diplomatic, stories behind, you know, why he's being appointed, but he's a very gifted negotiator, and he may be sent to talk to Israel and the Palestinians, let them know there's a new moment. You know, again, an African-American being elected president of the United States, who's got such a diverse personal story, for many people in the Middle East and elsewhere, this doesn't conform with what they think about America.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something, it doesn't fit into, you know, the white devil that's been, you know, put up around, you know, various countries. So it's going to force people to kind of rethink what America stands for, and that's the opportunity. And I think, you know, we're going to see Barack Obama moving very, very quickly. Again, I think it's going to start today on a variety of fronts,
right,
including Guantanamo Bay, which that is going to be, you know, one of a number of issues that is going to take some time to sort through, maybe more complicated than was portrayed in the campaign, and will be more daunting than some of his supporters had hoped for.
Mm-hmm. Already news this morning that war crime trials have been suspended for 120 days.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is, you know, one of the themes yesterday that was, for me, breathtaking, was the explicit repudiation of the outgoing president.
Mm-hmm.
There's a kind of a protocol to this, and, you know, everybody comes together. It doesn't matter about party. This is really about our country and America and our values. And, you know, you can go back over many presidents. I've got to go back to basically, I think, Roosevelt, where when he did his inaugural, he pretty clearly repudiated the outgoing President Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say what Barack Obama did yesterday was more direct, more obvious, and more kind of devastating.
Hmm.
I think, you know, part of it is going to be on these issues of how we balance protecting national security and abiding by the Geneva Conventions and the Constitution and what, you know, Obama said yesterday, our values of the country. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a kind of a stop put on the trials. They're going to probably move maybe before the end of this week on closing Guantanamo Bay, and then more generally a message to the world that there's a new sheriff in town.
Right. Well, it will be so interesting to see how that sinks in to countries that have thought us to be an enemy.
Well, you know, it's very striking. You know, already there's kind of signals that are coming from Iran that they're anxious to see, you know, what's possible here. The Iranian country is not nearly as monolithic as we sometimes assume in America.
Mm-hmm.
There are real, you know, factions and battles. And Iran has got its own problems. I mean, after all, oil prices have plummeted. There is real economic pain on the ground. And the younger generation that have high expectations about lifestyle and other things. And what's happened with Obama and his clear signal that he wants to sit down and talk, there will be differing views and differing interests, but let's see if we can reach some accommodation that protects both countries' national security interests. That's something that's being taken very seriously in Iran, and I think you can kind of see various signals coming from Tehran that they're ready for that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Jean from Wauwatosa. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. What a fabulous show. I have so much to say. I'll try to limit it to the most important stuff. In his speech, I really liked his comments on greed and immaturity, if you have that, Kathleen. Just to hear a man say, and this is not what I said to the screener, I'm sorry, but to hear him say, 60 years ago, my father wouldn't have been served at a lunch counter.
I know.
Oh,
yeah.
To hear him say this, what he couldn't say while he was campaigning,
mm-hmm.
but to hear it now. Also, I was proud to vote for him in the Senate in Illinois and glad the rest of the country's caught on to the true definition of a leader. He's inspired artists and musicians, and while he calls on all of us to do our best, he's unique because other people, this might have just fallen completely flat and it wouldn't have worked, and that's his gift. I was very surprised at my emotional reaction. I was just tears streaming down my face like you see on TV, I thought. And lastly, the international perspective. We had a gathering here. There were representatives from England and Ireland and Australia, and it is true. The rest of the world will get to know what our America really is about, not the George Bush America, because that's not really the 97% of us. And that's all.
Thank you. Thanks, Jean. Thanks very much. Oh, I think we lost our guest. We lost Professor Jacobs, but we'll find him in a moment. And I agree with Jean that is, for those of us who lived through the early days of the Civil Rights Movement, for those of you who lived through the Civil Rights Movement, that is a profound event, a profound thing for him to have said. And when we think about that history, it was not that long ago. His father would not have been served at a restaurant in Washington, D.C., I mean, you could hear that and what people were saying all over. And also the fact that so many musicians and artists, et cetera, came to that concert at Lincoln Memorial and so many people just wanted to celebrate. We were just commenting on Jean's comment, and it is a profound thing in this country. The history of race is such a hard issue. So many people, as people made mention of yesterday, and have died for this in this country. And for him to talk about his grandfather not being able to be served in a Washington restaurant, I mean, I was a kid in those days, but I remember that. That wasn't very long ago.
No, it wasn't. And it's something, you know, obviously a tremendous battle on the part of African Americans. And, you know, one of the other stories here, this was a battle, including in the South, where there were many whites who, you know, in a way broke from their families, say, this is not right. And I think, you know, the part about Martin Luther King that resonates so much with America is that this was about values.
Hmm.
And you kind of go through the history of this, and it's quite striking, the struggle within the kind of civil rights movement and a kind of broader movement of rebellion about kind of a values-based, nonviolent approach versus more violent approaches. So this is a culmination, I think, of a very profound movement of many, many people across the line. And yet, you know, I think Obama was very careful yesterday to make sure that this was a moment that respected and celebrated in a joyous way this accomplishment, but also made sure that it was much broader than that. I think this was the
right.
We were talking
yes.
about initially about
yes.
this broad fear in the country and how to address it.
Mm-hmm. What about Gene's comments concerning his comments on greed, his talk referencing the Bible, it is time for us to put away childish things?
Well, this comes back to my point about repudiation of President Bush. There's been a lot of criticism of President, you know, I think across the political spectrum, that he never really came to America and said, we're at war, and hear the sacrifices you're going to make. Now, Barack Obama is coming forward and saying, you know, it's time. We've got to change the way in which we consume things, the way in which we, you know, are maybe impacting our environment, and the way in which we're interacting with the world. And we're going to have to make changes, and that's going to require responsibility and sacrifice. Now, what that actually means is something that's going to be worked out in the coming days, and I think he'll have his hands full. But clearly this was it was about as sober an inaugural I can remember. I mean, you go through the language he used,
mm-hmm.
and you put up, and you read it, and I would recommend reading this thing, because the tableau is so overwhelming. You lose track of the words, but there's language in there about gathering clouds, raging storms,
yes.
winter of our hardship,
mm-hmm.
collective failure to make hard choices. This is a real spanking. And, you know, I think it's a kind of a wake-up call. Now, again, how it gets played out in practice, that's the question, I think, of the day after.
Right. And many, many, many days after, right?
Many months after, years
right.
after.
Mm-hmm. Gene, thanks very much for the call. Reed from Clintonville, hello.
Good morning. Say, just a couple of comments here. I was just blown away, to use that term, by the prayer by Reverend Lowry, and I felt there was such a difference between the prayers of Rick Warren and Reverend Lowry. Reverend Lowry's was so uplifting in a variety of ways for me, and I found myself just crying. It surprised me, and then all of a sudden I realized how deeply I felt about this country and what it meant to me, and how much I had put in the back of my mind and heart the hope that I had for the country, because we were going through 8 years of terror, and terror in the sense of the administration that we had, and fear for the failure of our country, and all of a sudden it all just all came out of me. I'm just sitting alone watching it on television. My wife was at work, and it just overwhelmed me anyway, and I'm sure it did for many. But the prayer by Reverend Lowry was just very uplifting for me.
Thank you so much for your call. Let's go next to Bob from Waukesha. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning to your guests. You know, I was struck by the imagery and the visuals, I guess, of the whole event. But I wanted to ask your guests, too, there wasn't really a memorable line like "there's nothing to fear but fear itself" or "ask not" or, you know, "malice store none and charity for all." And I wonder what he thought about that, if people had expectations that there'd be some really memorable phrase from the speech and it perhaps wasn't there.
Well, you know, there was actually some commentary yesterday after the speech by the commentariat, and, you know, there were comments to that effect, that it was good but not a great speech. I think it's worth reading, because I think some of the lines, and maybe, you know, it doesn't get to the JFK line about, what can you do for your country theme. But there were very powerful moments, and I think some of the emotional reactions people had. I myself pulled out a variety of different, maybe sub-themes, didn't quite get to the iconic phrase. But this idea of a new era of responsibility, that's a pretty potent idea, particularly when you start putting it into practice. And I think one of the things about inaugurals and their lasting power is the memorable phrase, as Reed points out. But I think the other part of it is, how does it do in terms of adding coherence to what can sometimes be a very jarring or kind of confusing set of events? And here, you know, I think we may be looking back on the Obama speech and finding it helpful as a kind of a template for what will come in the coming months and years.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a very good inaugural address. I agree it doesn't have kind of the kind of iconic JFK line. But when you read through it, it's just chock full of very profound insights about this country and where we're heading.
mm-hmm.
and insights about this moment in terms of race, but also in terms of the breakdown in our society and what we have to do to get going again, that I do think will provide a kind of a roadmap moving forward, and will be something that we come back to and talk about.
And there were a couple when you mentioned the criticism of the Bush administration, which was quite powerful here. I thought a couple of the lines, as for our common defense, we reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals. I thought that was an important line, our ideals. And he made us remember our ideals yesterday.
Absolutely. And this is a longstanding debate, you know, going back to the founding of the country, about national security and civil liberties and kind of our place among the community of nations. And the point that Obama made and many other presidents of both parties is that you can protect national security and uphold these ideals, and it shouldn't be framed as a choice. There was another element there in the same section that you're referring to that basically rejected the kind of unilateral approach to foreign policy and said, you know, we have to work with other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another one of those kind of seesaw debates about, are we stronger working with other countries or going it alone? And another point at which Barack Obama, again, in an unusual way, repudiated his predecessor, who was, after all, sitting about 2 feet behind him.
Right. Thanks very much, Bob, for your call. We go next to Tim from Ladysmith. Hello, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I didn't vote for Barack Obama, President Obama, but I do support him as my president, and I wish him very well, and I'll continue to pray for him, and I hope he has a very successful presidency. We need good leaders at this time. Unfortunately, I think sometimes when I hear your callers that I know all of them voted for him and are supportive of him, perhaps you ought to have a show of people who didn't support him. I have a little bit different perspective on the whole situation. But with that said, I hope he has a very good presidency. I unfortunately think many people are so starry-eyed with him that they're kind of setting themselves up for some major disappointments, because the president, although he does set the tone of things and he can use the bully pulpit, we still have a very poor Congress. And frankly, I don't have much confidence in the liberal Democrats that are running Congress. And, I think that's the bottom line, and we're dealing with some situations that are not easy things. And I don't know as Americans are ready to bite the bullet of what really we're going to have to face in the future that isn't, by the way, George Bush's fault, and they're going to have to deal with it through this president, and unfortunately that may not be pleasant.
Mm-hmm. And just to let you know that I was interested in hearing from a guest, too, today who did not support him, and we had somebody scheduled to be with Professor Lawrence, who canceled on us 5 minutes before the show started, unfortunately, in the spirit of bipartisanship. I won't say who it was, but I agree with you. I want to hear that perspective as well, and I'm glad that you called in, and we certainly have listeners. And our guest, this who was to have joined you, made the point that pretty soon the economic calamities that we face, we'll forget about the fact that President Bush was president. They will become his calamities. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. In fact, I want to make it really clear to Tim, I'm not involved in any party. I'm a registered independent. And for me, this is, it's a science. This is what we analyze. I think if you look at the research that's done on presidential approval and what drives it, particularly the economy and other kind of unfortunate events, it's quite likely that Barack Obama's approval ratings will drop from, the 70-plus range that
right.
we're at right now to below 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree. I think we're, I keep saying this, we're heading for choppy waters, and I think Barack Obama was pretty clear about it. And I think the speed with which he has been moving in terms of, not only the first 100 days, but the first 100 hours, is a implicit recognition.
Yes.
That things are bad and they're
mm-hmm.
going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to complicate him. I mean, just look at the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The president's already been, pushed back by members of his own party in Congress who said he was giving in too much to Republican views on the stimulus package. I think the substantive challenges facing our country in terms of the economy, there is no playbook. We're kind of off grid here. And it's going to be trial and error. and there's a lot of frustration with the financial rescue plan, the so-called TARP program, with the $300 billion going out the door, and folks saying, hey, what do we have to show for it? Well, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but that's probably not going to be the first time where things didn't work out as expected.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the combination of both would have really deeply set philosophical differences between the parties in Congress, even though Barack Obama, I think, is making a good faith effort to bridge them. The very profound and daunting challenges in our economy, the financial system in America, but also globally, this is going to get very choppy, and I think there'll be a lot of Democrats who will be looking back at both the economy, but also, you know, some of the foreign policy areas. We're going to be in Iraq longer probably than Barack Obama suggested during the campaign. The use of military force in other parts of the world will probably be necessary at some point over this first term. It's going to be a strain.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with Tim, and I think it's important, and I think Barack Obama tried yesterday to assume one of the most important jobs as a leader, which is both to inspire but also to teach realism.
Right.
And to try to control expectations.
Right. And it will never diminish the importance and the beauty of what happened yesterday. No matter where you are on a political spectrum, the millions of people, all the American flags waving, the bringing in of our patchwork quilt of who we are is a moment that all of us will remember. We'll always remember that, I think.
And these are important moments. I mean, I think sometimes we kind of pinch ourselves and say not to get caught up in the moment, but it really is one of the rare occasions where we come together as a country.
Yes.
And we celebrate and acknowledge and talk about what it is that we share.
Mm-hmm.
This is an important, you know, just from a kind of, you know, how do you maintain a country? And you kind of look at other countries around the world. It's an important rejuvenating moment, and something that's important for the health of our country and our communities.
Thanks, Tim, very much for the call. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number for you to call. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Lawrence Jacobs, director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Minnesota, our guest this hour. The next hour of our program will be looking specifically at the inaugural address that President Obama delivered yesterday. All right, let's go to Brandon from Decorah, Iowa. Hi, Brandon.
Hello, Wisconsin.
Hi, Iowa. We had a great time with you last year.
I just wanted to give you a call. I appreciate the program. I consider myself a conservative with the emphasis on conserve, and I did vote for Barack Obama. The main reason is because I thought that he has the foresight to, I mean, I've seen this economic mess coming for a while, and it's unfortunate that we have to have things get bad before we can actually take action and make them better. I believe we Americans have the fortitude to do so. I mean, you know, I hear people saying, well, World War II got us out of the Great Depression. No, it was the mobilization of the American people that got us out of the Great Depression, and World War II was part of that and just happened to coincide with it. One of the comments earlier from your speaker was that you know, the address was quite a spanking, and in my opinion, it was a much-deserved spanking. We Americans, I'm not going to point any fingers, we can't expect Barack Obama to do it for us. We need to do it ourselves. And he's our leader.
Professor Jacobs.
Well, I think we're now into the thick of things. you know, we're going to find ourselves as citizens, tested, and there are a lot of things we've become used to, whether it's, you know, driving SUVs, and I've got one, so I'm going to put it right on the table, to, you know, the kind of lifestyle we lead, the treating of our houses as kind of a, you know, ATM machine. I mean, these are the sort of things that are painful that we've come to expect. Barack Obama's made it very clear that he's going to take a hard look at our Social Security and Medicare and other programs, and look at ways in which we can bring those into balance, particularly Medicare. I think that's the real challenge moving ahead. The military is probably going to get a very hard look in terms of areas where we can make some budget savings without significantly reducing our defense capabilities. And I think part of the outreach to John McCain is to try to bring him in, perhaps even a leadership role in that sort of commission on the military budget. These are all going to require both from us individually, but also different groups and sectors of our society, taking a hard look and really being willing to give up some stuff. That's painful, and there's a reason why presidents don't like to do that, because they know it's for sure going to get a chorus of complaints.
What are you going to do with that SUV, Professor?
Well, you know, my daughter told me, she said, you know, Dad, I'm not going to blame you for this. You bought it 10 years ago or 12 years ago now, but you can't buy another one. So I bought a sedan that gets 40 miles a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm mending my ways.
All right.
But, you know, you drive around, you know, you folks in Wisconsin, though, you're in Minnesota on these roads, it's really nice to have four-wheel drive. The snow starts coming down and that sort of thing. But we've all got to change.
Thanks, Brandon, for the call. Leah from Green Bay. Hi, Leah.
Hi. I just wanted to share what my sister told me. She called from the mall during the inauguration, and you know how people were being announced right before it started, and as people were coming out, a lot of the audience clapped wherever they were on the mall. And then she said when George Bush was announced, a few people started to boo, but then the others quieted them down. And she said when he walked out, it was like they were in a sea of silence.
Hmm.
And I thought that was... that's his personal legacy, that after 8 years, that is the best that people could do for him. And it's so sad, but it was also, you know, we know the rest of the legacy, but she said it was impossible to believe when you stood there and there was total silence.
How did she happen to go, Leah?
My sister lives in California, and she does a lot of interfaith work.
Oh.
And she said to me, I have to be there on this occasion.
Hmm.
And so she just went.
Mm-hmm.
She found a place to stay. She said she stood up for 4 hours, and her knees hurt. And she just said, and then she went later on, she got into the Kenya ball. Where
Oh, did know, she?
People, yeah, it was late in the evening, and she stood 2 hours
till
she got in for that.
Uh-huh.
And she said it was very lovely because people were there from his home village. And
oh, I imagine.
It was, you know, it was exciting. But when she told me about ex-President Bush and how people just stood there, and I was watching, you know, I was watching, but she said to be in the middle of that extreme sea of silence.
Hmm. Professor Jacobs, what do you make of that?
Well, the president's approval rating is about 22-25%.
Very low. Mm-hmm.
In terms of sustained low approval ratings, he's kind of in the record books. And I think, you know, when history goes back, there will be eventually, I think, some positive things said about his administration, but there will be a longer list of real disappointments. And, you know, folks will talk in Iraq about the surge and why he was right, and they may be right, but there's now already a growing set of these official histories that the Army and the military does. And they really get in and talk with the generals. And I can tell you that the conclusion about the civilian leadership from the White House and into the Defense Department is absolutely devastating.
Hmm.
And there was that long period before the surge. And you may remember the surge idea was hoped for as part of the initial invasion and rejected by Secretary of State Rumsfeld and the president. But I think, you know, there'd be a lot of very hard questions about, you know, why we ended up with our financial institutions collapsing. No doubt the blame does not only fall on George Bush. Some of these policies were started earlier under Bill Clinton. But there was clearly, you know, some major mistakes made of, you know, foreign policy and national security. And I think President Bush was increasingly open in acknowledging that. But I think history will not treat him well. On the other hand, you know, there were a lot of people in the mall yesterday who voted for Barack Obama or Democrats, I'm not entirely surprised by the silence or the booing.
Right.
I think there was, very gracious acknowledgement by Barack Obama in the beginning of his speech for the service that the president has given. And just look at pictures of this guy. I think he gave it his all. People may have problems with it. And the transition he ran, it really created a new high watermark. We've had transitions between Democrats or between Republicans that wasn't this generous and really thoughtful and kind of making it kind of a seamless thing, and has allowed Barack Obama to come into office and start governing immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think President Bush and his team get a lot of credit for that.
Thank you, Leah, so much for your call. I'm glad you were listening today. Roy from Elko, hi.
I think the phrase of the speech that sticks in my mind is a new era of responsibility. I'm an old Hubert Humphrey admirer, and was still fighting over the issues that were raised by Humphrey as early as his book on that he called The Causes Mankind. And we still have many of those same problems and issues before us. And then if you look at Obama's train trip, with the speeches he made there, if you look at the example of his doing a paint job on the interior of a house in a poor area, and if you look at that short speech but very potent speech, without any great lines, without any great applause through most of it, it's a very large lesson in social, fiscal, and international responsibility. And I think that's the phrase that's going to stick out, and that's the theme of his administration.
Mm.
That's what's coming. And if you study that speech and think about it, I think he spelled it out very clearly.
I think that's very insightful. Professor?
Well, I agree. And I think I had kind of underlined the same line earlier. And I think the Hubert Humphrey comment is telling. Hubert Humphrey, of course, 1948, addressed the Democratic Convention. You know, really was one of the first established Democrats to kind of put a line in the sand and say, you know, this accommodation to segregation and racism has to end, and the Democratic Party has to lead it. And then you shoot ahead to the 1964 Atlantic City Convention, and, there was some controversy about the seating of the Freedom Democrats in Mississippi. And there was, and still is, actually some quite raw nerves about how that was handled. But the thing that's striking about it that Hubert Humphrey was part of and Walter Mondale helped put together was an agreement within the Democratic Party that there would no longer be segregated delegations. And within a very short period of time, we're talking years, the Democratic Party became desegregated. And, it really, I think, created the pathway to yesterday. You could not have Barack Obama without what Hubert Humphrey did in 1948 in that Atlantic City convention. And for a long time, the Democratic Party took it on the chin for that. The South, which had voted overwhelmingly for a number of decades, the Democrats slipped and became a solid Republican area because of the loss of support among many whites, not all, but many whites. So the Hubert Humphrey comment, I think, is a powerful one, and one of the shoulders that Barack Obama was standing on yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call. Margie is next from Franklin. Hi, Margie.
Hi. I'm calling in to make a comment about the things that people have said about the speech not having any one dramatic impact like Kennedy's or Roosevelt. And I guess I would like to point out that when we're talking about so many issues, so many critical issues, if there was one that jumped out way above all of them, then other people would say, well, that's not the most important, because that's one of the things that we are discussing is which one is most important. And I think he put them all on a level playing field and said, we have all of these. He talked about the Muslims. He talked about neighborhood responsibility. He talked about greed. He talked about everything was there. And I think, as your guest pointed out, sit down and read it. And some of them, maybe a lot of them, are going to jump out and hit you between the eyes. And I think some things that people were listening to yesterday there was so much said and so much personal responsibility. I think people need to digest it, and people need to absorb it and understand what responsibility they hold in it. Because all you can do is take care of yourself first and then move out. I think there's a lot of personal reflection that is going to have to go on with that speech. And I thought it was wonderful. And I was at Serb Hall last night, and there was a table full of people that I sat with that had not voted for him, and they were just waiting for the speech. And I think they wanted it to not be great, and they were blown away, and they did not vote for him.
Thank you, Margie, very much for your call. Professor Jacobs, thanks for being with us. It's a fun time for you. It's a whole new administration, always interesting for a professor of political science, I'm sure.
It is, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Professor Lawrence Jacobs, director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls, everybody. We have news coming up, and we'll return and look at the speech specifically, so stay with us. Even on the line, many of you want to talk about it. So that's all coming up the second hour on this Wednesday.